Totally Football Show. City Spurs. City Spurs. Spurs. City. City Spurs. Also today, a bit of Ajax and a look forward to this weekend with City Spurs. It's the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Who, listener? I'll tell you who. TalkSport International's Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, James. How are you?
Thank goodness. Ooh, my heart stopped there for a second. Talking's Pat Nevin.
Hi there. How you doing?
And fresh from Monday's live show in Leeds, it is Duncan Alexander.
Hi, James.
Hi. Crikey, what a midweek. Hey, after the drama in Leeds, then there was the Tuesday night, Brighton enlivening the relegation race, no end. We'll get to that later on. And then you had all those Champions League matches, which have left us with semi-finals like Barcelona-Liverpool and Ajax-Spurs. Wow. As you point out, Duncan, Fernando Llorente against Dusan Tadic in the Champions League semi-finals.
Yeah, we all thought it was coming for years, and finally we got to that point. So exciting, yeah.
Wow. Do you have one standout moment from this midweek, Alvaro?
It has to be Lionel Messi's goal against Manchester United, his second one, when David De Gea made that horrible mistake. But I think that the best game overall was by far, and probably the best game I've seen in my life. Seriously, I'm not getting too carried away. The Manchester City Tottenham one.
Right. Well, Pat, you've seen a lot of football. Was that the best game you've ever seen in your life?
It must be kind of close to the best games. I'd need to really think about it. To be honest, I think the Champions League's beginning to throw up games like that quite frequently.
Interesting.
Last season.
Let's start then with events at the Etihad, the night the football got jacked up on speed and Sonny D and went on a rampage.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Wow, a match that should have had the Titanic music all over it, Alvaro, that felt like it should have been streamed in 7 one-hour episodes, each one dropping at 2 a.m. on a Monday morning UK time. Incredible.
Yes, I think that, as I said before, it's a game that had everything. It was like one of these books, like the Odyssey from Homer, that has got everything in it. Love, passion.
Homer?
Different, yeah.
Like the Iliad and the Odyssey?
Yeah, the Odyssey, yeah. Homer, yeah.
Right, yeah, I was just checking.
The game had everything, and I believe that even the VAR, which normally can be a downer in this case, perhaps it was a downer for Manchester City supporters, of course, but the justice made. At the end of the day,
right.
Probably, definitely with the Raheem Sterling goal and probably with the Fernando Llorente's goal, brought something new to the game. But I think that we should be valuing a lot what football has become over the last 10 years. And I think that it all started with Barcelona's success in 2009. I believe that the clubs attack much more than in the past. 15 years ago, you had two holding midfielders pretty much in every Champions League club semi-finals. But nowadays, you've got teams that go for it. And Ajax, Spurs, Manchester City, Barcelona are a testament to all that.
It's the Johan Cruyff DNA, isn't it?
Yeah.
Manifesting. For anyone who missed it, and there will be people who thought, well, it'll be cagey. Because I think Michael Cox on this show on Monday was saying, yeah, it'll be a cagey one. It was an extraordinary match.
It was cagey for the first 3 minutes, to be fair.
3 minutes. So 4 minutes in, Sterling pounces.
Raheem Sterling, who takes the shot and finds the net. It's the perfect start for Manchester City.
And makes it 1-0. And at that point, Pat, what are you thinking?
Mayhem. Yeah, it should be a walk in the park, really, for City.
For City,
because,
yeah.
You know, they've been playing at that sort of tempo in for the whole 3 minutes until then. But you just got... I mean, could Spurs fold? Because Spurs have folded before, haven't they?
But it was very reminiscent of the Liverpool home game last season when they started brilliantly, scored really early and basically battered Liverpool for the rest of the half, and you thought the same was going to happen again, but it didn't.
It didn't. 7 minutes into the game, 3 minutes later, Son puts one under Edison.
Looking for Eriksen. Son with a chance. It's in. Tottenham Hotspur have equalised pretty much straight away.
Yeah, another mistake from a Manchester-based goalkeeper in the Champions League this week. Edison kind of waggled his leg at it and it went underneath him. And that obviously changed the game quite a lot because that was the away goal.
And then 3 minutes later...
Eriksen, Son with another chance and Son with another goal! What a start for Tottenham Hotspur in Manchester!
Well, I mean, Sterling's opener was great, but this was a lovely finish, no?
Yeah, and given that everyone had focused on Harry Kane being out injured, I mean, Son has generally played better this season when he's been in the team and Harry Kane hasn't, and he kind of demonstrated that pretty quickly.
So Son's second goal means that they are now leading 3-1 on aggregate, and because of away goals, City now need 3. Alvaro, did you believe?
No, I didn't believe. But when Bernardo scored the equaliser, then I started thinking that that was possible, because Manchester City had a stream of a good flow at that time. But it was a bit striking for me to see again how vulnerable Guardiola's teams are in Champions League. Every single mistake becomes like a shot on target against them. And that is something that has been punishing Guardiola's clubs for a long time. But then when it comes to Manchester City, they attack with everything they had, and Kevin De Bruyne was spectacular, sensational, and I believe that there has to be many question marks on Pep Guardiola, why he didn't play Kevin De Bruyne in the first leg. I know that maybe he wasn't 100%, but 3 days before he had played the FA Cup semi-final against Brighton, starting a game.
Yeah, well, come on to the De Bruyne issue and also Pep's approach to these two legs in a bit, but it's 11 minutes in, and as you point out, Bernardo Silva's already equalised. It takes a full 10 minutes then for City to take the lead in this leg with a magnificent sort of side-footed pass from Bernardo Silva, which sets up De Bruyne, who then crosses for Sterling, arriving at the back stick, as you footballers like to say, Pat.
Oh, my word, what a game we have here. It's been so easy for Manchester City to cut Tottenham open.
Spurs remain reeling for about the next, 50, 60 minutes or something.
But that can happen with Manchester City, and they could have scored 2, 3, 4 goals. They were completely dominant of the entire game, but then Spurs know that that's the game plan. They know that they have little periods. They know, just as the lads were saying there, that, you know, if there is a weakness to City, it's the break, and they are incredibly quick in the break. So that's the game plan. They understand it. They get it. You also get a wee bit lucky now and again.
Yeah, I mean, we should point out. Yeah. Sissoko went off just before half time, which, you know, fair enough.
They wouldn't have chosen to do that.
No, but I think a lot of Spurs fans spent most of the second half saying, why did we bring Llorente on? That was the wrong move to do. And lo and behold.
You think only Spurs fans? I think everybody thought.
Pretty much everyone, yeah.
So that's even impressive. Llorente, probably.
Even Llorente, he went off the pitch, got a phone, and tweeted, what am I doing on the pitch? But then it came good.
Then it came good in the 73rd minute. He bundles in a controversial goal, which puts him... I know, what's the score now? Is it 3-3?
4-3. 4-3. We've missed Aguero. So Aguero scores City's fourth of the night.
Ball threaded through there to Kevin De Bruyne. So energetic and powerful. Aguero! Thumps it in! Cometh the hour, cometh the man for Manchester City. The greatest goal scorer this football club has ever had has just scored a vital goal for them in the Champions League.
Brilliant finish, beats Lloris at his near post. I mean, exactly the same spot he scored the famous goal against QPR, pretty much.
Yeah, and he's been scoring many goals from an acute angle this season. He has done it against Liverpool on the 3rd of January. He did it against Manchester United in November as well. He's really scoring really difficult goals from an acute angle against top goalkeepers this season.
Well, an important thing happens then, though, and it can't be ignored. They take off Silva and bring on Fernandinho, which for Pep, slightly negative move, you know, and it's unlike him. And it's, I don't think they played negatively then.
No.
But it is a slightly negative move of a, right, we need to shore it up a little bit here because they are looking dangerous on the break.
Well, it was an interesting formation to start with. So Gundogan would have been the only defensive-minded player apart from the defenders prior to that.
And even he's not defensive-minded, but he's positionally defensive on the day. So he's the deepest lying of them, allegedly, although he was spending a lot of time in the opposition box as well. So, you know, he knew he needed to go for it. He's gone for it massively. He's probably now just come back to what is a more normal City setup with Fernandinho. But, you know, it was almost from where he was, it's a slight backward step, which is just not like him. But as I say, it didn't affect, you know, the way that they attacked again, because they didn't stop trying to get another goal, which I thought was brave of them.
Llorente then has bundled in off his hip another bits perhaps in the 73rd minute, and City now are piling forward, and it's chance after chance. Spurs cannot maintain possession. There are some excellent tackles followed immediately by them handing the ball back to Man City, and as you might expect, in the 92nd minute, it all comes together. City finally get the ball in the back of the net. Eriksen passes backwards, bizarrely, to Bernardo Silva, who flips it up for Aguero, who crosses it, and Sterling just Sterling puts it away, and the whole place erupts, and it's incredible. Man City are through.
With a chance, Sterling with a chance. Here's the moment. Oh, he's done it! Raheem Sterling for Manchester City, right at the death. What a moment for Pep Guardiola and the Manchester City players. Pochettino cannot believe it. Tottenham have given absolutely everything.
They were through, but they aren't. I think that the VAR have to come in place in this time, and of course Pep Guardiola and everyone celebrated crazily.
They're checking for a potential offside during the goal, and it is under review.
I mean, people have positions on VAR on both sides of the fence. Martin tweeting, "VAR City Blues," nicely done. But in terms of a twist, I mean, it's up there with The Sixth Sense, isn't it?
I didn't see it coming, The Sixth Sense. Everybody I ever know talks about The Sixth Sense. Said,
the Crying
Game. I knew that all along.
I didn't see it coming. Did you think in The Crying Game?
The Crying Game didn't surprise as much as The Sixth Sense.
Did it not?
Yeah.
All right, what about Fight Club? He is Tyler. Oh, no.
Kaiser Sose, didn't see that either.
Did you not? No. I'm not sure if I didn't see that one coming. But anyway, this...
we might go off the point.
This was a twist of similar dimensions.
Sinead Chakir is listening to Massimiliano Irrati, and it's been disallowed.
They disallowed it.
It's been disallowed for an offside against Aguero.
Yeah, you get obviously the celebrations, and then there's the rumour that goes on, it's going to VAR, and then... After what seemed like an interminable wait, it was reversed. And there's obviously the clip of Guardiola, platoon style, going down on his knees. And,
it absolutely was Willem Dafoe-esque. Somebody also, BT Sport have that kind of VR app where you can look at the arena in 360. And somebody's posted the footage, and you can see that the face is falling on City fans in much the same way that they did to United fans on that final day of the season when City. Snatched the title at the last. But,
James, that kind of makes one of your points. You know, you talk about the effect that VAR has and it kills the emotion. No, I disagree slightly. And that it gives you another massive emotion. It's not a hell of a good one. It's a very negative one. It's a real downer. But that's part of it. Well, the incredible highs, the incredible
it's
lows.
It's part
I love
of VAR,
that.
Is it part of football? I would say that was a game that didn't need any further emotion. And that even if it was dramatic in that use, Alvaro, you saw a game we'll touch on shortly, the Juve Ajax, the VAR in that was, as it usually is, a huge buzzkill.
It can be. I mean, we're experiencing this in La Liga. I mean, there are still people who support VAR and some VAR and some people that don't. But I think that the problem with VAR so far, it has been the application of it. For instance, yesterday in Llorente's goal, Shakir, the referee, he didn't get in the stadium the right camera angle, the only camera angle that could shed some light into Llorente's action. He didn't get it in the stadium.
What would his decision have been had he seen that angle?
I really don't know.
You've seen this angle. What do you think? So you're saying it shouldn't have been a goal?
That angle that we are talking about, I remember seeing it coming through and thinking, I don't think he's going to give that. Yeah. Because it's... Yeah. He didn't do it deliberately, but if it's come off your arm and going into the goal, they usually think, no, I'm not giving that.
Well, from June the 1st, apparently, that will definitely count as a handball. Yeah.
Yes.
Whereas now it's kind of open to interpretation from the referee.
All right.
I mean, it led to a lot of debate about arm ripple online, which for me is the breakout ice cream flavour of 2019.
I mean, an incredible finish, as you point out, Alvaro, to an absolutely extraordinary game. Did the right team win? Or was that kind of irrelevant after a game?
You know,
like that?
James, I was thinking about that, and I believe that Manchester City shouldn't have lost the tire in the same way that Tottenham shouldn't have lost it. I believe that the away goal rule, when it was implemented in 1967 in the European Cup Winner Cup, that... was implemented to break the third tire or the game in a neutral venue if two teams got a draw after two legs. But nowadays that rule doesn't make any sense because with the extra time and the penalties, there is already a tiebreaker. Right. Why should you have the away goal rule as well?
But I think the away goal rule kind of made that game. You know, that was kind of the VAR of the 60s and 70s, as you said. And I think it adds a level of tension and kind of complexity to a tie that you wouldn't get otherwise.
Yeah, the way it's, anyway, VAR controversy, tick. Mention for away goals rule and should it still exist, tick. Should we say that Spurs without Kane, without Harry Winks, with Sissoko going off, with Ali with a broken hand, Spurs, Pat, without a single penny spent for the last two transfer windows, for them to be through to the semi-finals, how great is Mauricio Pochettino?
It's extraordinary. Now and again with the Champions League, I think you just, it all kind of falls right for you. Remember Liverpool recently, gets to the Champions League final, you think, well, that's not the best Liverpool team I've ever seen. But they get all the way there, and but for a Salah injury, they might have won it. You never know. And just now and again, you look at a team, you think, this is all rather falling for you quite nicely, even with all the problems they've had. So it may well be that, well done, Pochettino. It may well be that, you know, it's just kind of falling the right way. I'd say well done for them, but I've got a big concern for Spurs. Just one last thing I would say. Don't blow it again. You know, the amount of times Spurs, over the last number of years, they get so close to things, and then there's just this explosion in the mind. Now, maybe they've had that 1.15 in the league there. Maybe that's gone and maybe they're back. But, hey, Pochettino didn't have to show anything, did he? I think we knew beforehand.
They've also got the new stadium thing. Which, you know, it's so rare for a team to move into a ground midway through a season. Right. And two of the first six or seven matches are going to be, you know, crucial Champions League home games. So, and they're at home in the first leg against Ajax, which I think is quite crucial.
But they'll also be without Son Heung-min in the first leg against Ajax.
He got to know live on television about that. Apparently, he got to know about that in German TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It reminded me of Ivanovic getting absolutely to know that on television when Chelsea qualified at Camp Nou in 2012. But yeah, I would like to say here that Pochettino has done a terrific job because when he inherited this squad of Spurs, Bentaleb and Chadli were basically the main midfielders in this team. Soldado, Adebayor were the strikers. And wow, he has done a very gradual improvement in every single department. And perhaps in media we get a little bit carried away with signings because summer is long and we have to write about something. But also, where is this value of training with your means and making your players slightly better, which is what Pochettino has done. Mm. I mean, he's not asking for signings all the time, but he's working with the players he's got.
I think he'd like them now, though.
They've been really, really hampered by injuries in some key areas, with Harry Winks being out, on and off, Eric Dier, Sissoko.
Yeah, but you should expect that in a World Cup year. You've got to accept in a World Cup year, if your teams have done really, really well, you need to have more cover than you would have in a normal year.
Spurs have more players in the semi-finals than any other club, I think. But, I mean, Llorente, who would have thought Llorente would be such a crucial player at this stage of the season? You know, got to be the first man to score a hat-trick at Tranmere and a crucial quarter-final goal in the Champions League ever.
You have to bring me down again.
So, I know there's a couple of other things you want to touch on from this game, Alvaro. One, you want to talk about Kevin.
Pep Guardiola made the mistake, James, of playing Kevin De Bruyne in the FA Cup semi-finals against Brighton. I don't remember if he played 90 minutes, but he definitely started. And he didn't play that game at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium 3 days later. And Kevin De Bruyne makes such a difference. And he is fit enough to play that game. And he is one of the few players in Manchester City that he can make the difference individually, not collectively, because he is capable of producing astonishing things,
right,
unlike Riyad Mahrez. Unfortunately, the Algerian player is not that good anymore.
Kevin De Bruyne didn't get the result they needed, but in all other regards, he was the key player for Man City last night.
Yeah, he got a hat-trick of assists, which is pretty rare. And, you know, as Alvaro says, City play a lot more vertically when he plays. His passing so incisive. I mean, possibly one of the best performances on a losing team ever in a Champions League game.
You know, it's really hard, though. On Pep Guardiola, because you need to manage him back for a minute, an injury. And have they got a game that they can really afford to lose? To be honest, the one game that they could afford to lose was the first game in this first leg.
Or the FA Cup semi-final against Brighton. I'm not afford to lose it, but they could maybe...
Well, it's afford to lose it and still go for everything. That's what I suppose that's what I mean. Mm. And they could have, up until then... I mean, having said that, we didn't lose last night.
Exactly. Ian Irving on Monday was saying, I hadn't heard these quotes, that Pep had more or less said in his comments about the Palace game, that he had rested players in the first leg against Spurs because he regarded Palace as the more important match. He was confident of City's ability to make up any kind of deficit that they incurred in the first leg.
That's exactly my thoughts. And interesting, you spotted that. The other thing about De Bruyne, just to mention a bit, when he had made his comeback, it was early on in the Champions League. It was a game at home against maybe Germany, so I can't remember which one, but I watched it. He was utterly brilliant. I mean, 11 out of 10 for 89 minutes, and then he got injured again. So Pep, he does not need that. Right now, when he's got all these games just now, he was scared to death of losing him again. So I understand why he was kind of wary of putting him in and taking him out.
One last thing, maybe. Football 365 flag up a quote from Kenny Dalglish of regarding Liverpool's first round knockout back in 1978 from the European Cup at the hands of Nottingham Forest, and he talked about his naivety and maybe the complacency because Liverpool were facing a fellow English side, and whether Pep would have had the same approach had his opponents not been ones that he was used to facing week in, week out. So you almost get a little bit too casual about the fact that you're playing in a Champions League quarter final.
You'd be brave to say he was casual about it, but he's just trying to minimise the score. As you walk away from that game down at Spurs, having just missed a penalty and only 1-0 down, you think, I just about got that right. I think he would probably think that as he walked away. Hey, in hindsight, which is a wonderful thing, what we've got and he didn't have, you know, yeah, it was the wrong thing, but all for what, Aguero missing a penalty? Who's going to put money in that anyway? So, to be honest, I would really struggle to be harsh on Pep.
All right. Well, as Michael Cox says, looking forward to the third leg of this on Saturday. We'll talk about the next instalment of Man City Spurs after this.
Yeah, the good thing about these recording booths is that they're absolutely soundproof.
Right.
As long as that red light there is off, no one out there can hear us, especially that god-awful producer.
Terry, I forgot to say the bulb in that red light is broken. We can all hear you, mate.
Oops. It's easy to mess things up these days. That's why Paddy Power do money-back specials, so not all mistakes cost you as much. This weekend, we're offering money back as a free bet if Man United beat Everton. Paddy Power, home of the money-back special. Selected markets only applies to first bet on all losing goal scorer, correct score and what does Paddy bets on the match. Actually fund £10 as a free bet. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Alvaro, Saturday, you're going to be gripping your mic and speaking words into it about Man City Spurs.
Yes, and I cannot wait, James, because I believe that the title race is absolutely beautiful this year. Everything is going to be down to the last game, like in 2014, I believe, in which that season Manchester City won the title. But I am thinking, I don't know what I would prefer to be. Either Liverpool having to win 4 games, or either Manchester City having to win 5.
Okay.
The bottom line here is Manchester City depends on their own results to win the title, right?
Right.
But today Pep Guardiola will wake up and think, well, I have to win on Saturday because otherwise that's it.
Do you think he slept?
No. I really don't think he slept. I really don't think that he slept well because yesterday he looked devastated. But the point here is, what is more difficult, to win 4 games or to win 5, especially if 2 of those 5 are against Spurs and Manchester United?
Absolutely, and a Spurs team that's just destroyed their Champions League hopes. Are they about to do it to their title bid, Duncan?
They've won all 5 of their Premier League games without Harry Kane this season, which is obviously something we touched on earlier. But they do have a pretty bad record at the Etihad. And as Pat pointed out, despite all the midweek drama, they did actually lose that game. But Spurs need to win as well, don't they, for the Champions League? So, I mean, there's people are theorising. Some people are saying, well, going out of the Champions League is going to make City really flat. Some people are saying there's going to be a huge reaction. I mean, really, we don't know.
Well, yeah, Dan Talentire, making that point about the emotion of the Tottenham result, what that is going to do to Man City. Spurs, you mentioned, with a top four battle of their own. They are third right now, but only 1 point ahead of Arsenal and Chelsea. Pat, what do you think this does to Man City, this result?
Yeah, it is interesting to see how they react to it, but I think they've been at the top of things for quite some time, and I think the league, now that they can actually say, right, Champions League's gone, you know, Liverpool can't say that. Obviously, you know, that's a tough one for Spurs are going through now, so they have other things in their mind now. City, I know they've got the FA Cup final, but you can bank that. You just throw that to the back of your mind and ignore it now. So you've just got one thing in your mind now, the league. Yeah. Kind of think it will help them.
We've been talking about City's fixture congestion for weeks, but now it's kind of switched around. Liverpool have got these two massive games against Barcelona, and as you say, you know, City can just concentrate on the next 5 games.
So the odd thing, the only way it's helped them as it actually helps them in the league, I think.
OK. Meanwhile, in the Champions League, the team that Spurs will be facing are Ajax. Incredible Ajax. Only 75 days left to enjoy them, Pat.
Do you know what? I looked around the table there when you said Ajax for a very specific reason, to see if everyone smiled. And everyone did.
Right.
it's they are. You cannot help smiling when you think of Ajax.
Even Juve were smiling. Yeah. No, they almost were. I mean, they came out and they said that, and the Italian press were all the best team won, and mm-hmm. absolutely fair, no complaints. They taught yeah. Bayern a lesson this season. They absolutely smashed Real Madrid, which I think we all smiled about in the last 16. And now they play the old lady off the park. Could have been way more than just 2-1 in Turin.
It's just that youth thing, wasn't it? It was just that youth thing. But I've been covering Juve quite a lot. I've done 3 of the last 4 games, right? And so I've got to know them a lot better than I did before. And I hadn't realised how slow they were, particularly in the midfield. Oh, they're a slow team. And one team you did not want to come up against was Ajax, with that pace and that vigour and that liveliness. And they just looked, well, like the old lady.
Absolutely. Johnny Blaine says, Ajax are like when you think you're really good at FIFA, but then your 13-year-old cousin rocks up and smashes you at every game. A delight or a delicht, as pretty much everyone's been pointing out. While we dial up somebody who certainly was delighted by Tuesday's result, our friend Mikael Jongsma of Opta Johan. Enjoy some of the indigenous commentary. Mikael had a spectacular game on Wednesday, but prior to that, there was a real footballing masterclass on Tuesday at the Allianz Stadium.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone was taken by surprise at how comprehensively Ajax have beaten Juventus, and Juventus look bereft of ideas, and in that sense they make Juventus look like Real Madrid, which is not a good thing these days. Ajax were very comfortable, and you could hardly imagine Ajax being less experienced on big Champions League occasions than Juve when you look at the match.
What's the reaction been like in the Netherlands to Tuesday's performance?
Disbelief on one hand, a lot of belief as well, because people are starting to think that Ajax might win the Champions League. And I think in general, people are just really proud to see a team with a history like Ajax doing really well. And I mean, to be fair, like compared to previous seasons when you had issues with scheduling and stuff, you can see that the Dutch FA is now really behind as well, and it has made sure that some fans of other clubs are a bit, miffed about how things are handled, because they're now looking to maybe push back even a full round of Eredivisie fixtures to open up a bit of free space for Ajax to around the Tottenham Hotspur games. But in general, it's just people are really happy to see a Dutch side performing well, especially because there was this growing sense that the success of PSV in 2005, when they reached the semifinals, was maybe the last time of a Dutch club coming so close to not European glory, but at least in the Champions League.
Mm. Well, Ajax haven't been in the final since 1996, when, of course, they lost to their opponents on Tuesday, Juve, in a game which I know still rankles with the side from Amsterdam. A lot of suggestions that Juve had an unfair advantage. And a subject, by the way, listener, that we explore quite fully in our Italian football podcast, Golazzo. But yeah, there was a big revenge angle to Tuesday's game, Mikael.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's Juventus. They've only beaten Juventus once, which was in 1974, I think. So, I mean, apart from the whole suggestion of doping around the 90s side, there's also the element of Juve beating Ajax quite a few times. And, I mean, just in general, Ajax are probably the most popular team in Italy anyway on Tuesday, because I mean Juve is not a team that's loved by those who don't like them, basically. I mean there was this element of Ajax just being overly thrilled, but I think it wasn't just about revenge. It's just more of a time of accomplishment for a young players and a few older heads that have just done remarkably well to not just be there, but be there on merit as well.
Okay, let me just ask you one last question. If you were coaching Spurs in the semi-final, how would you beat Ajax?
I think Fernando Llorente is probably typically a player Daley Blind doesn't really like to square up against. And I think in that sense, Juventus were a bit lucky that that they missed Mandzukic, for example, because they really bombed the Atletico defense time and time again when they played them, and that wasn't really an option this time out. I think that physicality, trying to play the ball long, get from under that press quite a bit, will definitely be the route to go. And I mean, and the one thing that I'm quite curious about is that no team has really gone for the fullbacks so far in this campaign. And I'm not saying that these are definitely the weak spots, but usually you can see a player. And I think in that sense, Ajax fans were really scared to play Manchester City rather than Spurs, because you have that pace on the wings and the trickery. This Spurs side doesn't really have that, but if they can get that at the right back and get at the left back, then there's definitely some possibility of getting in behind and scoring a few goals.
There you go. Mikael Jongsma there of Opta Johan, your Dutch affiliates, Duncan.
Friends.
And speaking on the extraordinary Ajax, who are bidding to become one of the Champions League's Leicester, I suppose you could say. Could this be their year? Jake Callanan asks, with Sun out first leg and Ajax's current Champions League form, who is the favourite to make the final from this? What do you think, guys?
Spurs,
Pat?
Spurs slight favourites to make, but only slight.
I think Ajax.
Okay.
It's written in the stars.
Okay. I know you wanted to have a quick word about Cristiano Ronaldo, who had the only two chances, only two attempts on goal from Juve in 180 minutes against the Dutch side.
Yeah, I mean, Juventus obviously signed him with the express aim of winning the Champions League, but you could argue that they kind of put too many eggs in the Ronaldo basket. I mean, he had 30% of Juve's shots in the Champions League this season. When you compare that to players like Messi, has had 25% of Barcelona, Salah's around the same for Liverpool, and no one at City has even had 20% of shots. So you kind of do need to spread the efforts around a bit.
Indeed, Pat?
I suppose Ronaldo did score the first goal, didn't he, against Juventus and that. But you're right, if he's scored that many goals, I understand it. My problem with Ronaldo is, it's back to what we were chatting about early on. There are certain players, if they're playing in a team, everyone else gets sidelined and you don't get enough. And the amount of football we're watching of Juventus is incredible. And the one guy that's hit me is Moise Kean.
Right.
I just think, wow, he's going to be, if he is not already, he is going to be world-class and an important player in world football in the next 10, 15 years.
And this was the first game that he hadn't come on and scored in for, I think, about eight or seven. No, this was the eighth appearance, and he scored in the previous
and
seven.
I just think it's his age that stopped him playing.
Right.
And it shouldn't be. If you're good enough, play. Problem is, if you've got Ronaldo demanding to be the central person, where does Ken play in that game? So I think if they could have found a way to get both of them on the park and playing together earlier.
Well, maybe start with him instead of Dybala, who admittedly was sacrificed out on the wing.
After 45 minutes, he was sacrificed. But yeah. I think they've just been too slow in Ken. He's spectacular this season.
I cannot be very critical of Cristiano Ronaldo because he has scored in the knockout stages, but his gravity in the teams is tremendous, to the point that this is the best scoring season for Karim Benzema at Real Madrid, and Ronaldo left, which explains you a lot.
Yeah, but it's not like Real Madrid have been doing particularly well since he's not since like they blossomed without him.
Yeah, no, that's true. But Cristiano Ronaldo's gravity and importance is massive, and he will take all the shots. That's what I meant.
Right.
To the point that Karim Benzema this season is scoring more goals than ever, just because Cristiano Ronaldo has gone and he has taken some of the reins. But back to the Ajax thing, I just wanted to say, they are a young team, yes, but they've got a good mix of youth and experience. Daley Blind is one of the players, Dusan Tadic as well. And there is another one, Hakim Ziyech. I don't know if I am pronouncing well the name of the Moroccan striker. But they ask in Spanish radio to Onana after the game, Ajax goalkeeper, who is the best Ajax player? And he mentioned Ziyech. Maybe we don't talk enough about him, but he's excellent as well.
He has been particularly good. I mean, he has had 8 shots on target in the knockout stages this season, which is as many as Manchester United.
Wow.
Most people gave him man of the match in the game the other night.
They did?
Yeah, most
good.
People did, yeah.
Good. Yeah, Ajax were exceptional, and we should temper, I guess, our criticism of Juventus with that. And also on the Cristiano Ronaldo front, it was giving him the ball that got them past Atletico Madrid when he scored that hat-trick in the last 16. Anyway, we'll talk more about this game, as I say, in Golazzo. Now, obviously, there's still bags of Champions League football to talk about from midweek. What happened to Man United in Barcelona, Liverpool's latest win in Porto, and, of course, the massive game down at the Amex on Tuesday night. Brighton losing at home to Cardiff. All that and more on the way.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at roytheroversofficial.com.
Alvaro, tell Liverpool supporters who weren't watching on Tuesday when United visited the new camp, or earlier perhaps when Barcelona faced Spurs, what to expect from Messi and Barcelona in the semi.
It's been a funny season for Barcelona because they haven't been spectacular, but they've been solid. They have lost only three games this season against Leganés. Another one in the league that I cannot name now. Yes, Betis. Mm-hmm. And then another game in the Cup, which is irrelevant now because Barcelona went through in the second leg. Three losses this season. So they have done their homework and what they had to do this season when they needed to do it. Barcelona is a team that doesn't have the vitality of Ajax or Manchester City. As Pat was saying before, he was talking about the speed of some of the and the youth of some of the players. Barcelona is more of a diesel team in the sense that in the second half is when they normally kill the game. Not against Manchester United this time, but normally in the second half is when they manage to wrap it up. They are solid. They've got the know-how to win the Champions League and they haven't won it since 2015. At the beginning of the season, there was a season presentation at Camp Nou with the players talking to the fans in the ground, and Lionel Messi told the supporters of Barcelona that he wanted that beautiful cup back. He was obviously referring to the Champions League, which is something that Barcelona hasn't won since 2015.
What do they call the Champions League?
Orejona.
The cup with the ears.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's
big ears, right.
And I have to just to end up with this. I would like to say that Barcelona this season has shown the solidity, of course, and there is a factor here that is going to be key. Liverpool is going to be in the title race at the end of April. Barcelona has already won the title. They need 9 points out of 18 to wrap it up. And probably this weekend and next midweek, Barcelona is going to get 6 points. And basically, the title race is over in Spain, which is a massive factor to take into account because Barcelona will be able to rotate players before playing Liverpool.
Okay. Have you ever seen Messi play this well before?
I think that Messi has been four players in one in his career, and now he's been the Platini type player in the sense that he's on an all-rounder as a midfielder. He started as a winger, then he was the fake number nine and he broke Müller's calendar year record as well. And nowadays he's probably at the peak of his knowledge. I wouldn't say his powers because he's slightly slower than 3-4 years ago, but his football knowledge is excellent. Mm. And he knows how to capitalize mistakes from the rivals, like David De Gea's mistake the other day, but especially Ashley Young's lost ball in Barcelona's first goal.
Ashley Young shouldn't be doing drag backs. I mean, to be fair, we all do, so...
It used to be a winger. Wingers are allowed to do it, but it's where you do it. The point you were making about Liverpool having a little bit more stress on them, they've got Cardiff away, which isn't the hardest game. Then Huddersfield.
This weekend.
Then Huddersfield at home. Mm. To be fair, it's not that tough, really. So the thing that's got me about Liverpool watching them against Chelsea on Sunday is they played this incredibly high-tempo, high-paced game, and they've changed it this season. Certain games have thought, no, we don't need to do that, we'll do that certain periods, and then they win the game, they step off it. There's been more intelligence about the game this season. They don't need to do that in these two games. I think they'll have enough just to pick those two teams off. They might have to do that against Barcelona. Wouldn't that be interesting? Because when Man United done it for 10 minutes, it looked okay. I actually get a feeling that Liverpool might be able to do that heavy metal high press for longer than anyone else against Barca, which might make it really interesting.
And I think that Liverpool is probably the most solid team in Europe at the minute. This season they have lost only 6 games, but they are having a projection of 97 points this mm-hmm. football season, which is astonishing. Mm. And also they don't seem to suffer a lot. This season they've been behind in the scoreline in the Premier League for 165 minutes. I've done the maths before the show. And it's absolutely impressive because it's not only even 2 full games being behind in the scoreline in Premier League. So they've got all this solid approach that they didn't have last season. And I would say again that the fact that Barcelona has won the title has to, they haven't won it, but they are about to win it, has to be a factor because Liverpool will play easy games, yes, I give you that, against Cardiff, Huddersfield, but there is a level of stress around those games. Yeah. They know that they have to win them. And Barcelona can still afford a couple of draws here and there.
Liverpool also the only team, English team, to ever win away at Barcelona as well. So they've got that.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Barcelona, where they'll be facing a couple of old friends in the shape of Luis Suarez and Philippe Coutinho, whose sale helped them build the current side and who scored an absolute beauty, the third goal against Man United.
And he celebrated like Riquelme at Boca Juniors Stadium, but he was sending a message to Barcelona supporters and Barcelona media. Well, this is obviously unspoken, but Philippe Coutinho has been criticised, not very heavily, but criticised by Barcelona media. Barcelona supporters, they've been supportive with him. I've seen players doing worse and being, or doing better, sorry, and being booed, like André Gomes, playing for Barcelona last year. But Philippe Coutinho, I think that he overreacted when he scored the goal. He scored a beautiful goal. That's what they signed him for, really. But he's been underperforming the whole season, and finally he managed to perform. And he knows that if he doesn't do as well, Ousmane Dembele is going to take his place in the games against Liverpool.
Quick word on Man United. Duncan?
Yeah, I mean, that was the first time, believe it or not, they've ever lost a two-legged European game by four goals on aggregate. So they are setting new standards in one way.
Right, and they've got another having lost their fourth away game in a row, they've got another tough road trip coming up this weekend in the Premier League. We'll touch on that and a whole bunch of other Premier League stuff, including that midweek Brighton-Cardiff showdown after this. Tuesday night, Liverpool's next opponent in the league, Cardiff, were mounting their extraordinary survival bid away at the Amex Stadium. A 2-0 win for Neil Warnock's side, who don't know, in his words, when they're beaten. Mendes Lang with an absolute beauty of an opening goal, and Sean Morrison with his first of the season, as Brighton went down to the seventh goal they've conceded in just two games without scoring any. No wins no wins in five, no goals in those games. And the big question Tuesday night was, can Chris Hughton survive?
I tell you what, well, it'd be a shame. To be honest, if it was me and I was running Brighton and they got relegated, I would keep him on.
Right,
I think he's done enough.
But with four or five games to go, would you get rid like happened to him at Norwich, remember?
I think that's the way football goes, and there's a chance that might happen, but I don't think it should. Also, if you look at the games left, travelling to Wolves, travelling to Spurs, they're not easy, and you get the feeling that last game of the season against Newcastle might be tough.
Right. It was interesting to see this time Neil Warnock not speaking about the referees after the game, which might
be... Is
that
allowed?
Which might be because when the scoreline was 0-0, Brighton had what looked like a pretty evident penalty claim denied.
Yeah, funny, isn't it? Strange. Curious.
Anyway.
It was good to see Sean Morrison score because he had the highest XG this season of any player who hadn't scored a goal.
Who's the leader now then?
Umar Niasse, closely followed by Christian Benteke.
Christian Benteke, who's still yet to score.
Yeah.
Been injured a bit, of course.
A bit.
So anyway, that 2-0 win for Cardiff, massive as it is, still leaves them 2 points behind Brighton, who still have a game in hand. Let's do counting up with how many points we think the two teams... Because I'm really curious to know which of these two teams is going to survive. So Brighton, Wolves away, what's that going to be?
You've got to say that's a loss.
Okay. Well, where are they going to get some points in this then?
Wolves away. Struggle against bad teams.
Yeah, but...
True, but...
So.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Wolves away, Spurs away, Newcastle at home, Arsenal away, and finishing off with Man City at home. Where are they going to get points in that, Brighton?
Newcastle.
Will they?
I really think so, because Newcastle is going to be safe. Done and dusted. It will be the season
so
for Newcastle.
Pick up, 3 points there, you think?
I believe so, yeah.
Which would be enough to keep them up, unless Cardiff do something remarkable in their four games, which are at home to Liverpool this weekend. Nope.
No point.
Fulham away.
Ooh,
That's the one.
And they follow that up with Crystal Palace at home, a game they could win, I venture. You could see Cardiff picking up 6 points in those two games. They finish off with Man United away, which, slightly
easy.
More difficult. But it's those two games then, wow.
If they could get 6 out of 12 points there, that would be amazing.
I don't know, that may be
enough.
Yeah, I don't know where to set the mark, but perhaps 37 points will keep you in Premier League. And also, the goal difference is favourable to Brighton.
Yeah,
which is an important factor.
Do you know one of the odd things? We always do these calculations and then the last day of the season it goes mental.
Right.
It just goes berserk and everything goes out the window and just mad things happen. If you're in a part of the season where you know if you win that special game at the end of the season, then just mayhem breaks out. It's happened before, and it will happen again.
Sure it will. OK, Cardiff then taking on Liverpool on Sunday, while Brighton travel to Wolves. Duncan, what were you going to say then?
I was just going to say, to back up Pat's point, remember the season West Ham stayed up, and they were away at Old Trafford on the last day,
yes,
and they managed to win that game when no one saw that coming. So
It's difficult to say, because last year Brighton got to stay in Premier League after beating Manchester United as well. So you never know. And Fulham beat Everton the other day, because there are some Fulham players that they've got their particular agendas as well. And one of them is Mitrovic. He was trying to score from every possible angle because he wants to add goals to his stats. And you cannot take as granted that Fulham is going to be an easy rival for,
Cardiff.
In this case, Cardiff, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. All right, well, let's move on to the weekend then, and there are many questions, not least, will we see our first draw in over a month, Duncan? A stat you mentioned on Monday, indeed.
Yeah, Tuesday marked exactly a month since there's been a draw in the Premier League, which is the longest we've ever gone.
That's extraordinary. Another big question is, what of Man United, who again are on the road this weekend, fresh from defeat at the new camp? They are at Everton. Are they now going to crumble as swiftly under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as they had blossomed previously? Pat?
Because I was in Paris for that game, you know, and you had to give him this contract. And I remember thinking, yeah, I'd give him a one-year rolling contract for that. Yeah. I wouldn't be giving him a three-year. You know, I just can't see that being sensible. But there was this massive clamour. And they got the three-year contract. And I'm thinking, what are you doing that, you mugs? And then realised, that's not how it works. He's got a three-year contract, but he'll have a one-year payoff on it. So basically, it is a one-year rolling contract, almost certainly anyway. But to be honest, if you're looking at it now, and it's nothing against Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he got a fantastic rise out of that team there. Well done. But does that team look as if it's anywhere close to the finished article? Absolutely not. Would you put money in Man United getting in that top four? Absolutely not.
OK, and what about this weekend away at Everton, who, Fulham aside, have suddenly shown a real return to form?
Yes, they've beaten Arsenal and they've beaten Chelsea back-to-back at home, which is always very good, because Everton had a terrible record lately against the top six. I have to commentate on Fulham-Everton last week, and I was very surprised with the, I don't know, the lack of cohesion between some Everton lines. The midfield, Idrissa Gueye, André Gomes, they didn't seem to play for Bernard or for Sigurdsson or for the striker who was Calvert-Lewin. And there are some players that are clearly underperforming in that team. Seamus Coleman is one of those that, after his terrible injury, he hasn't been the same player anymore. Everton is a team that needs a lot of work to be done still.
I was at those both games that you talked about. The game against Chelsea, they're the better side. The second half, obviously, the fight and the battle. The first half, they never got a kick. The game against Arsenal was one that really jumped out, because Arsenal needed to win that game. They just outfought Arsenal completely start to finish. And all the players that you wanted to, Sigurdsson's exactly the point. I think he's the core of it. When Sigurdsson plays well, they're an exceptionally good side, and they actually really, really balanced. But he's had a little dip this season. I still think he's the core. I would still be building that team around him, because he's, by a distance, the classiest player on that team. They'll miss Gomez this week, by the way. He's out for three games, isn't he?
Right, and United will be missing. Yeah, absolutely, after that stamp on the weekend. Luke Shaw will be suspended for Man United to add to their defensive woes. United currently lying sixth.
Yeah, they're sixth. I mean, if they lose this match, it's going to be the first time they've lost three in a row away from home in the Premier League since 1996, which kind of illustrates they are in a pretty bad way at the moment.
Right. They have City at home on Wednesday as well. You're going to that one, Alvaro?
Yeah.
Nice. Meanwhile, this weekend, their top four rivals, well, Spurs have City, as we talked about before. Arsenal host Palace, and Chelsea hosting Burnley. Did they beat Burnley 4-0 at Turf Moor? Why are you chuckling about this, Pat?
I chuckled because you won't remember, but last time I was on, I said there's only one team I'm confident out of those four that are going for the top four. Only one team I was confident about was Arsenal.
Okay.
And
well, they're still in the top four.
Well, they were sixth at the time.
Right, okay.
And I got a lot of raised eyebrows.
Right.
And a lot of people winding me up about it. And I felt so confident about it. And then they got up there and I'm feeling really smug. And then I went to see them play against Everton and thought, you're talking nonsense, Nevin. They're rotten.
Who do you feel confident now?
I still think, not confident, but I would believe Arsenal.
Uh-huh.
And Spurs just ahead of Chelsea.
I agree,
okay.
Chelsea haven't lost a home game on a Monday in the Premier League since Peter Crouch was at school.
Well, there's your answer.
And they've played four.
More than that.
Right, Arsenal taking on Palace. What have we got about this? Oh, producer Ben says it's ironic that this game takes place on Sunday at tea time, because the last time Palace won away in Arsenal in 1994, this was number one. You're a DJ. Something to keep in mind there for your next gig. When is your next gig?
The answer to that question is no. And I've got one coming up in Manchester quite soon, which is a weird one, which it's electric something or other. And it's basically just playing tunes from 8 o'clock till midnight. And,
isn't that...
And whether people dance or not, it's not important.
Oh, so they've given you a set list?
Yeah. No. You don't. You just come and play your tunes. So a lot of people, they ask to come and play, who've got eclectic different sort of tastes in music.
Right.
And just sit down and you just go and play your tunes. And you, it's not like you're getting everyone up to dance.
Right.
And that's really nice and different, because every DJ wants to get people dancing, usually. Mm. It's nice to actually go and play tunes that, you know, you wouldn't normally play.
Were you DJing right now and wanted to get us up out of our seats, what would you drop? Ben's already had Wakefield, so you have to go for something else.
I'd go for public service broadcasting Spitfire.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I like that.
That'd work.
With that?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I didn't like the blank looks elsewhere.
No, I'm familiar with the track. It wasn't the answer I was expecting, yeah. But that's what makes you such an interesting DJ. Arsenal have moved up to fourth. Oh, yeah, they had that 1-0 win at Vicarage Road on Monday, and Alvaro, you were there.
Yeah, again, that was destroyed after 12 minutes. Number one, because Ben Foster made a calamitous mistake when it
Describe
came to...
Describe it.
Well, he just wanted to clear the ball or to put it very far away, and he didn't see Aubameyang coming. Aubameyang, he just put his foot on it, and he scored the goal, just blocking Ben Foster's clearance. And then 2 minutes later, Troy Deeney was sent off with a straight red card. Probably it wasn't a red card. I think that it was not a red card, but the player put himself in that situation. There was no need whatsoever to elbow Lucas Torreira in that game. After that, I have to say that Watford looked really good and they played really well, but they just couldn't score a goal. So I think that Arsenal should take some credit for that victory, of course, but also they should take some worries, because they weren't able to score the second or the third against 10 men for 78 minutes.
They have trouble killing off opponents, as we saw in the first leg against Napoli. Will that come back to haunt them this evening in Naples? We'll find out. Well, you'll find out. Listen, you might already know. You might be chuckling to yourself. Anyway, but they'll be tired, of course, from the Europa League when they face Palace on Sunday tea time. Duncan, did you want to throw something in, or shall
I? No, just the Deeney has worked himself up into this weird state whenever he plays Arsenal now, and that's essentially the result.
You live by the cojones, you die by the cojones.
Exactly. Yeah. We're allowed to say, I mean, it doesn't get talked about, because the top one and two is a great battle. You know, 3-6 is a great battle. Best of the rest is a cracker.
Is it?
If you're into that sort of thing.
Yeah.
46 points Watford, 46 Everton, 47 Wolves, 47 Leicester.
Wow.
Well,
it's
after the weekend, the Watford Twitter account, which has got quite feisty in the last few weeks, kind of mocked Wolves and Leicester and Everton all for losing and said, it's up to us now. And then they lost. So
it's a dangerous time to be mocking people. Mm.
And I am sure that Javi Gracia doesn't want that, because I met him a couple of times and he's the most down-to-earth, cautious guy you can find. So I don't think that he will go in the same... He will follow that narrative and that propaganda of Watford. Mm. That's what I wanted to say.
OK, Watford, who, by the way, are away at Huddersfield. That's on Saturday afternoon. No Deeney, of course, as you mentioned, he's suspended for 3 games. Huddersfield, for their part, are still up, am I right, Duncan, for the lowest all-time scoring record?
Yeah, they got 19, 20 is the record. They can equal the record for home defeats in this match. They're on 13 at the moment.
All right, that's exciting. In other record-breaking news, Fulham still in with a chance of making it to the worst defensive record. Derby conceded 89 in that season. How many have Fulham conceded so far?
76.
Oh, so they've got some work to do.
And they're playing against a team whose games have seen the most goals overall. Bournemouth?
Yeah. Yeah, right. So they're at Bournemouth. And what to expect from Bournemouth, Lord knows at this point.
Well, I'm expecting a lot from Ryan Fraser.
Okay,
he's
nice.
A player that is in every newspaper now as a possible candidate to go to Arsenal. And he's doing a good job this season.
He's the new Pat Nevin. we described him, I think, previously, no, haven't we?
Possibly not. He seems quicker than and also slightly bulkier, and also looking for a new manager.
Sorry, in what sense, Pat?
Because Alan McLeish has just lost his job as a manager of Scotland, just as we are chatting. And that's a tricky one, really, for Scotland, for Ryan Fraser, for anyone who plays for Scotland, but also, more importantly, anyone who wants to manage Scotland. So for all of us who have used to watch The Young Ones many years ago, hands up anyone who wants to be the current Scotland manager.
Pat, just
don't go down.
You've
to the
seen
ground.
The Young Ones. Yeah.
Yes. Because so, that's the nightmare Scotland have got now.
Why is he gone today? What's...
No, he was under pressure after the Kazakhstan game and after that. And I think there were some delicacies in how he was released from his post. There was no question he was going to be released from his post.
Right.
But it's taken a little while. I suppose they had to just go and dot I's and cross T's, but he's gone. But do you know what? How nightmarish is... I suppose one way of looking at it would be, if you're Scotland manager now and you turn it round, you know, you're a miracle worker. Mm.
Who do you think's going to be?
Because that's a quick turnaround. If I had a choice and I was making the choice to pick the manager and I was in the SFA, I would take Steve Clarke.
Okay.
I would grab him from Kilmarnock. Mm. Although that would, as a former Kilmarnock player, I would just get hate mail from old fans.
Right.
But,
well, let's not say that.
No, I'm happy to say it. My country.
Okay. Anyway, amidst that turbulent backdrop, Ryan Fraser will be hosting Fulham at the Vitality Stadium with his Bournemouth teammates. Newcastle are up against Saints. No news on Rafa's contract yet, I think. Are there any suggestions in Spain that maybe he might go home at all, or is he too embedded in the English way of football?
The latter. I think that in England, Rafa Benitez, obviously, as his Newcastle plays in Premier League, Rafa Benitez is always in the spotlight, but in Spain it has been forgotten for a couple of years now, so I think that the rumours are only heard here in England, but in Spain I haven't heard anything of Rafa Benitez being interesting for any club at the minute.
Okay, and one other thing about Newcastle Saints. Duncan, you brought us an exceptional stat on Monday evening regarding Saints' Shane Long.
Yeah, who scored in his last two games, but continues to remain 3 inches shorter than Craig Short.
Crazy, no? Anyway, all right, and the other game coming up this weekend is West Ham taking on Leicester. We've got a goalless draw to talk about, and an extraordinary one. And Chelsea fans, Pat's going to drop a major revelation.
I'm Graham Wilgos, telling you to listen to The Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport.
The Sky years, it became much more businesslike, much more about getting the job done and get drinking when you get home because of what you were representing as well in terms of the brand. They didn't want people strolling down the Champs-Élysées at 3 a.m. being sick.
Join me, Sir Brad, and our special guests each week for a look at the greatest races and talking points from the 2019 cycling season. Plus, throughout the summer, we'll bring you Brad's unique perspective on the Giro d'Italia, the Vuelta a España, and of course, the Tour de France.
And there's no bigger privilege than to say the words, Geraint Thomas is our Tour de France champion.
The Bradley Wiggins Show is your essential guide to the biggest stories in cycling. Subscribe now on Audio Boom, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your audio on demand.
So Bradley there, Duncan, they'll be discussing Paris-Roubaix, of course, in the latest episode of that. A Paris-Roubaix route that you yourself cycled this very weekend, am I right?
Yeah, the day before the professionals, not quite as fast, but yeah, reasonable.
Wow, how was it? How many stretches of cobbles did you do?
20.
Wow.
And yeah, they are painful.
Damn. Wow, hats off to you, chapeau, as they say. Let's have a little scoot around Europe and round out one or two key things that have happened. Paris Saint-Germain once again had a chance to win the French title, and once again they blew it. It was 5-1 against Lille at the weekend. This time they went to Nantes and lost 3-2. What's going on at PSG?
Have you seen the lineup they put yesterday?
I didn't see the lineup.
Well, there are no stars in there, funnily enough. It's like the season is over for them. And it's.
Well, where is everyone? Well,
Neymar injured. Cavani wasn't there in the squad either. And they played with Choupo-Moting up front. Right. Julian Draxler as a midfielder.
Okay.
And then there was a mix
of... Danny Alves played because he scored a brilliant opener. Absolute screamer, no?
Danny Alves was playing, yeah. But then there was Diaby Paredes, Nkunku up front. So it was not the lineup that you would expect at the beginning of the season for them to have. They are going to wrap it up, yes, but this can only hurt PSG because they signed Thomas Tuchel, especially, for them to be good every single weekend, not only every now and then. And it seems that there is something in there, some, let's call it complacency, that doesn't help.
Well, similar story in Italy, actually, where Juve blew their chance to wrap up the title last weekend, getting defeated at Spal. And we talk about this in Golazzo, how every single one of their remaining fixtures, you could see them losing. And I'm not saying the title race is back on, but it would be hilarious. Napoli are taking on Atalanta on Monday, which brings us on to Napoli, who are in second place. But Atalanta, a team who were involved in an extraordinary match, Duncan. Has this crossed your radar against relegation threatened Empoli? Empoli are in the bottom three and travelled to the Stadio Azzurri d'Italia in Bergamo to take on Atalanta. And Atalanta absolutely battered them.
Yeah,
the numbers, 47 shots, 18 of them were on target. And Paul Carr, who I think is with, is he with a rival stats organisation?
No, they're sort of friends.
Okay, with a friendly, another stat. He says 47 shots, an XG of 5.86. To put that in perspective, that's the highest XG without scoring in any of the 85,000 matches that they've covered.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous and kind of proves the point of XG in some ways.
Does it?
Because I'm sure there were Atalanta fans coming out going, we should have won that game.
Right, and you should by 5.86 or something.
The classic scoreline.
All right, the goalkeeper, by the way, who was at the heart of all of this with the stinging palms at the end of the 90, was Bartolomej Dragowski, the Polish keeper of Empoli. He made 17 saves. The other one was a goal line clearance by one of the defenders. That's a record in Europe's top five leagues this season. Incredible. In Germany, Bayern are at home to Werder Bremen on Saturday. Dortmund, who are a point behind them, are away at Freiburg. And in Spain, Barca, you're saying, Alvaro, have pretty much wrapped up the title.
Yeah.
Real are rebuilding. What are they going to do?
Well, I've got a friend who supports Real Madrid, and he told me last week, this is worse than a pre-season. I mean, I prefer to watch Real Madrid versus LA Galaxy than what's going on at Real Madrid now.
Really?
Zinedine Zidane is trying to play every player and to see who is up for it for next season and who is not. There will be many changes next season. Zinedine Zidane has already implied that, and there will be a mini revolution in the team. Probably four or five new players will come.
Will there be an Eden Hazard in the team?
It's looking like,
okay.
Eden Hazard is going to be one of those players. Now there is this rumour that Joao Felix can be under Real Madrid radar,
really?
The Benfica player.
Can I say one thing on that? I thought for quite a long time Eden Hazard definitely is going to Real Madrid. I thought quite a long time. I was staying at Chelsea Hotel last night. I walked out of Chelsea on the way here this morning, and I met somebody who I won't name at the club, and I said, of course, with Eden going, and he looked at me and went, you think so? And I did not expect that reaction from that person, that Chelsea, specific person.
Chelsea fans, wow.
And I, because we've all kind of accepted that he's going. So you don't know. I mean, to be fair, if I was them, I'd be trying to get Mbappe more than Hazard, you know. But you might not be able to get him. But you know, that's the one I'd be looking for. And by the way, the rebuild at Real Madrid, it is monumental. It is massive,
costly as well, because first of all, they have to make as much money as they can while, for instance, selling Gareth Bale. Zinedine Zidane is not showing any love for Gareth Bale every time they ask him about the Wales player. If they get a good money from Gareth Bale, then they can buy good players. But Real Madrid is going to make a huge investment from now on, because they are building or reconstructing the Santiago Bernabeu as well. So Real Madrid is going to make a hell of an investment over the next 5 years in players and also the stadium.
Can I ask a question here? Right?
Please.
I heard a Spanish journalist said to me last week, he said, if Gareth Bale doesn't, you know, he's frozen out, he'll just stop playing football. So they won't get any money for him.
He's going to retire?
Yeah. And a Spanish journalist told me that last week. That would be amazing, that. So you've got Real Madrid desperate to get this money in. And he thinks, no, Gareth will just go on a golf course. So I hope that doesn't happen, because he's such a fabulous player.
It'd be funny,
and
though,
would
love.
But how would that massively affect what Real Madrid are doing from here on in?
Of course, I think that Real Madrid is going to find the money, either selling Gareth Bale or not, but selling Gareth Bale is going to help them go for some players. And Eden Hazard has to be one of them. Basically, they have to sign 4 or 5 players that can potentially start for Real Madrid. That's the thing, because otherwise nothing will change. They've got like a really huge squad, but some of the key players like Modric, Ramos, Marcelo, Toni Kroos, Benzema, and very soon Gareth Bale, they are going to be over 30 years old. And the young players that they signed over the last 3-4 years, they haven't responded. They haven't been up to the challenge. So new players are needed, but new players who are potentially starting for Real Madrid. You cannot buy more benches or players that come just to give some sort of help to the top players.
Many right. Ajax players are they allowed to buy?
One other thing on the subject of Real Madrid. The Amazon doc that Sergio Ramos was filming so propitiously as his team crashed out of the Champions League has now aired. Is that right, Alvaro?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, apparently in it, Ramos reveals that one of the things that he has is a painting of the Last Supper in his house in which he is JC and Marcelo is a disciple. It's always the paintings in these documentary series, isn't it?
Yeah. Reminds me of Tony Soprano when he got that painting with the horse. He looks like Napoleon.
Yeah, well, they changed it into a Napoleonic one, didn't they? Because he was freaked out.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Seems a excellent. Bit self-aggrandizing, does it not?
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
And then you remember it's Sergio Ramos, and you go, ah.
Now, is that everything? Not quite, listener. We're going to get some odds now. And then Alvaro is going to tell us about Greece.
Thank you, Jimbo. Altogether now, listeners, it's Lee Price on the line from Paddy Power. Lee, can we please get some odds for the Champions League and the favourites now that Man City are out?
Yeah, a bit of a lopsided draw, Ben. We think the win will come from the Barcelona versus Liverpool semi-final, with the fact that they're playing each other definitely improving the value here. Barca are the 7-5 outright favourites to win the Champions League, with Liverpool just behind them at 5-2. Then both the teams in the other semi, Ajax and Tottenham, are 4-1. Given that one of those teams will definitely be in the final, that could prove generous.
Well, it was an absolutely incredible game at the Etihad last night. What's it going to be like when they meet again on Saturday afternoon in the Premier League?
I'm not sure I could face another 90 minutes of that. OK, who am I kidding? I didn't want it to end. But it's just a shame that star player VAR will miss this rematch. Same venue, same on the night result, we think. City 1-4 to win this one. Spurs a huge 9-1 and the draw's 9-2. Another 4-3, by the way, to City. It's 90-1.
Liverpool, of course, need City to wobble in the league if they've got any chance of winning the title. But do Cardiff represent a bit of a banana skin here on Sunday?
Sounds slightly harsh, but Liverpool did go away to Portugal's best team and made light work of them in the midweek. And we think they'll do the same to Wales' finest. Liverpool are 1-6 to get the win, with Cardiff a huge 14-1 at home, despite desperately needing points. The draw is 11-2. And as for the Bluebirds getting on the score sheet, it's evens, they score just one goal or more. That could be good value.
Cardiff, of course, beat Brighton midweek, and it's between those two for that final relegation spot. What's going to happen to Brighton this weekend when they take on Wolves?
Yeah, they're looking desperate, but Wolves do have a weird record against teams that they should be beating. Even so, Nuno's men are 4-6 to win this one, Brighton 9-2. And the odds on Chris Hughton being sacked for the end of the season, by the way, have been slashed. He now tops the sack race. They might soon be nearer the bottom of the table.
Right, you can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only, begambleaware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. Alvaro, Greece.
Yes, PAOK can win the title this weekend.
Okay.
They just need a victory or Olympiakos losing. And if PAOK wins, they will clinch their first league title since 1985.
Wow.
It's been a lot of waiting for them, 34 years.
Last season, I remember there was a lot of gun waving.
Yes, with Savidis, the
president.
The owner.
Owner, sorry.
The owner of PAOK. Yeah, he came, as you remember, he came with a gun onto the pitch.
Yeah.
Well, essentially, this season, PAOK has been doing really well. They couldn't qualify for Champions League because Benfica knocked them out in the early stages.
Uh-huh.
But they are going to win the league, probably. And this is the very important thing for them because Aris, at the minute, is the team from Thessaloniki with more league titles. They have won 3. And PAOK, if they win this weekend, they will get 3 titles as well.
Okay.
Which they will effectively make them the best team in Thessaloniki because they have won more cup titles than Aris.
you know the one that gets me? That's incredible. Have you done anything in the Turkish league recently?
Not really, no, Pat.
So could you guess who's top of the Turkish league?
It's,
weird guesses, go on. It's not Gala, it's not Beşiktaş. It's none of them. It's Istanbul Başakşehir.
There you go.
Wow. And Istanbul Başakşehir were low league, non-league, about 3-4 divisions down, less than a decade ago.
Wow.
They are not very well liked in a very similar way to Leipzig, etc.
Oh, really? Have they been
It's an interesting story and definitely one that we should look on the show. I'm sure.
All right. Let's get, we ought to make space for some Turkish Super League action soon. Duncan, is there something you wanted to throw in about some Levantine or Eastern division?
No. I'm still concentrating on the League One relegation battle, which remains wide.
Is it? Okay. Well, you keep us across that next time you're in, which I hope is going to be soon. We, as an entity, as a kind of podcast with different components, will be returning on Monday, even though it's Easter Bank Holiday, listener. Because why? Because you, Michael Cox, James Horncastle and Jack Lang making the journey through the deserted streets to bring you that. Do hope you'll be joining us for that and that you have a very special Easter in the meantime. Many, many thanks to Pat, Alvaro and to Duncan.
Thank you. Happy Easter.
Oh, happy Easter to you too. In Spanish?
Felices Pascuas.
Bueno. Okay. Speak to you soon, listener.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5pm till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.